listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. What is a director of Christian education? What do they do? And many of you know that I'm a DCE and have DCEs as guests here on Faith and Family from time to time. And so we have an opportunity today to meet a DCE intern and learn about his work and something really special and fun that and unique, a great way to serve that he had just recently. Joining me by phone today, Matt Slabaugh. He's the DCE intern at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Charleston, Illinois. Matt, welcome to Faith and Family.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Matt, tell me a little bit about why, what led up to you considering this vocation of DCE and this preparation to become a DCE?
Well, I think there was a lot of different things, many different people. I've used the phrase a lot, you know, it takes a village to raise a child in the faith. And so I had a lot of great people surrounding me in my life at a very early age that kind of mentored me and showed me, you know, what faith looks like in their lives. And so the vocation of a DCE kind of was made evident to me through my home congregation, DCE, Krista Young. So she kind of just made me more aware of that career and kind of just the different options that you could take or different career paths within this DCE field. And so I actually did not necessarily grow up in the Lutheran church, but so there was always interest in me, this DC ministry of options. You know, you could serve as a DC within a church. You see many DCs become missionaries or work at a camp or do family ministry. And so one of the things that our DC program director at Concordia University of Chicago always made known to us was that DC ministry is cradle to grave, right? So that it's, you know, you're working with infants all the way through adults, senior adults. And so as a high school kid, I went on, it's called Vocatia, which was through the St. Louis Seminary, and that kind of helped me solidify my call to DC ministry and just call to ministry in general. And so then I toured Concordia University of Chicago and decided that was home for me.
So you've been studying at Concordia University Chicago. Tell me about some of the things that you've been studying and learning to prepare for this this service as DCE in the future and now serving as an intern. Tell me about some of the things that you've learned along the way, some of the classes that have helped prepare you for this.
Yeah, one of the biggest things I think I've taken away from my 4 years doing undergrad as a DCE is just these three kind of principles of mission, vision, and purpose. You know, that's just the backbone of a congregation or anything that you do when you are in ministry, right? So if those are not solidified and correct, you know, you can't go from there. So I guess an example of taking the steps back would be, you know, our own faith life. You know, if we're not having a balanced faith life, taking care of ourselves, how can we then witness to others properly? It's just not possible. So then the same thing, I think you take the step up and you talk about the church staff. And so if they're not unified and they don't have that same mission and vision, how can you reach out to a congregation? That's one of the big things. I'm trying to think of other classes we took. But we learned a lot of different stuff, and it's neat to now be doing that ministry that we have been trained to do now on internship.
So what have you been learning on your... How long have you been on internship now?
So I started in June, and it's a full-year internship, so I'm just over halfway through.
And so what have you been learning on your internship? What are some of the opportunities that you've had that have helped you learn about this vocation, this work of DCEs?
Right. Well, I think one of the interesting things is a lot of people, when I say that internship is a full year, they're like, whoa, that's a long time. And yeah, it is. It's 1 year. But I think one of the coolest things about having it be 1 year is just experiencing the entire life of a congregation for that full year. Obviously, we just had Christmas, so to kind of understand and learn the ways of the church during that time of the year, how to prepare fully, and now with, you know, Easter, which will be around the corner soon, to then prepare for that. I think one of the big things I'm learning on internship, especially during my first couple months, was just how to learn and respect and understand the culture that came before me. So they had a youth leader at my congregation, Emmanuel Lutheran Charleston, before me, so kind of just understand the way he did things, the way the kids kind of were taught, just to understand the way they do things and then how I may change it or how those changes may come subtly. And one of the neat things that we have just started on my internship is this creation of a youth leadership team. So this idea that we're not just only serving youth, but then youth can have a role, a leadership role within the church to kind of decide what they want their youth ministry to look like. So that's just a few things. But it's been really exciting to kind of have this opportunity and just kind of build these relationships. I predominantly work with junior and senior high youth, and so there's lots of different programs and things that I do with them, but ultimately it's been neat to build relationships with them outside of programs and just within their lives. Sometimes I visit them at school or just do different things with them on the weekends for kind of fellowship activities. So that is what I really enjoy doing.
It sounds like much of your work is working, is serving the youth and their families in that congregation and in that community and bringing them together around God's word and opportunities for fellowship as well. What about looking outside of the congregation, whether for you as a servant of the church or for those, for the members of the congregation, what are ways that they look to serve outside of their congregation, maybe in their community or around the world?
Yeah, so one of the things also on staff, Emmanuel Lutheran Charleston is right across the street from Eastern Illinois University. So we've had an established campus ministry for easily over 30 years. And so that's kind of a big ministry part of our congregation that kind of rolls into the community. We've dealt with a college ministry for a long time, and so our Greg Witta, who is on staff at Emmanuel, is actually a spiritual life leader within some of the residence halls within the community, so that's one way. And then personally through me, I just try to always, at least every quarter, if not monthly, to do kind of a service activity with the youth. And yeah, there's all sorts of different neat things locally. We have a food pantry that we try to serve at. There's a Bible verse talks, all about serving locally, kind of nationally and internationally. So that has always kind of been my goal, is to look at those different ways and avenues to do things.
Recently, you had the opportunity to travel and do some work supporting our missionaries, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod missionaries in East Africa. Tell me what prompted this trip to go and serve.
Yeah, so actually, the same home congregation in D.C., Christy Young, who I mentioned previously, now currently is serving in, it's called Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. It's actually the capital there. And so she extended the invitation for me to be a part of what they call a continuing education program that they do every year in January. Basically what this is they get the East Africa missionaries together and they kind of have like a weekend retreat of learning and fellowship time together to kind of just renew their faith and take time to process things. So during that time, while the adults are in a session, the kids are away. And so part of what my responsibilities were was to lead a children's programming team. And so I did that with my sister, actually Kristen, who is an elementary education major. So she fit well into this role. And then also it's Reverend Billy Brath, who is a pastor at Live USC, which is the University of Central Florida, and also has a Rev Creative ministry design and production company. And so it was neat. I was very thankful to get the invitation from Christy Young. I've been very passionate about missions while we got to know each other through serving that church that Christy led and the organization called Groundwork Guatemala that does ministry in Guatemala. And so it was neat to see this aspect of not necessarily serving directly to the field, but kind of this supporting of the missionaries and the work that they do, and getting a little glimpse into their lives, the ministry that they have done.
Tell me about how you prepared for this trip to serve the missionaries in Africa.
Well, one of the big things was, it was a 3-day experience. And so the time that we had with the kids was from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. and then 2 to 4 for 3 days. And so we kind of ran like a VBS program for these kids. And so the age range was very wide, anywhere from 1 year old to 17. And so that was exciting and presented a challenge with only 3 people to try to hit all their age groups. But basically what we did is we took an old VBS curriculum called Heroes of the Faith, and we kind of led 3 different lessons. Talked about Moses leading Israelites through the Red Sea, Elijah challenging the prophets of Baal, and Daniel and the lion's den, and kind of focused on those lessons with the children. And then Pastor Billy Brass led the time with the kids who were age 11 up. And so we kind of just prepared by reviewing those things, kind of understanding each other's roles among this children's programming team, and just how we wanted to allocate the time. One of the neat aspects was we stayed at what's called the Karen Bookson Camp, which was in the Maasai Mara, kind of like a game reserve. And so they actually, the staff there led a nature walk for the kids. So they got to see some of the animals and just the different things, kind of learned about the culture there in Kenya.
And so what did you learn about the culture where you were in Africa? You were in Kenya. Tell me a little bit about some of the things that you saw and the things that you learned about the culture.
Yeah, so one of the things that was emphasized to me numerous times, I have spent 3 months in Africa, in South Africa, a little country called Swaziland, which is inside South Africa, and then Mozambique. And so one of the things emphasized to me even more through these missionaries of East Africa was this aspect that Americans a lot of times stereotype Africa as just one big continent and the cultures all the same. But, you know, there's obviously different countries that make up Africa. So each one has its own different dynamics. And so as I spent a week in Kenya, I was able to learn a lot more about that culture. And Kenya, actually, they have Kenya and Ethiopia are known to have many different tribes. And so you could almost consider a tribe as different politics within that country and different ways of doing life. And so we actually stayed in what was called the Maasai Mara land area. And so that was the Maasai Mara tribe that was dictated that area. So they have their own different cultures and customs that I learned. It was a neat experience to kind of get a different glimpse. And we also flew into Nairobi, so to kind of learn that culture. And it's a very well-established city in Africa. And then so to see some of the missionaries who live in Nairobi and then others who live in Ethiopia, the capital of Addis, and just kind of how some of their resources are different living standards. So that was neat to understand and have them talk through with me.
As you interacted with the families who serve as missionaries, particularly with the children who are missionary kids living in that area, what have they been learning about the community and the culture where they live, where their families serve?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there are some kids who, you know, are just new to the mission field, who were born and raised in the United States. And then there's others who actually were born in Africa. And so going along those lines, it was very unique and interesting to see how that obviously changes their worldview. And when you were raised in Africa, how English, most of the kids obviously knew English, but how English was not necessarily a language that they knew as predominantly. some of them, and many of them have spent numerous years in the mission field, whether or not it's in Africa, but other countries. So many of them were familiar with just this idea of quick changes and changing cultures. But yeah, they were very quick to tell you stories about food differences and money, differences, and just the way of life. And that's what was normal for them. It was funny to, since I was only there for a week, I kind of, as an American coming in, I was a little bit more, I guess you could use the word touristy, where these kids, it was their home, and that's where they live.
Sure. What else did you learn about the LCMS mission work there, or the our partner churches in that area, in that part of the world?
Yeah, it was interesting to talk. So, predominantly in East Africa, we have missionaries serving in Kenya and Ethiopia, and so it was interesting to talk with a lot of the missionaries in Ethiopia who just started kind of at the last couple months of 2016. And so one of the interesting obstacles they faced in Ethiopia was actually a government-mandated state of emergency. And so that was kind of due to political instability. And so there was different things that they experienced with that, such as their internet was monitored, and some of their travel to other countries was prohibited. And so some of that stuff obviously hinders ministry, but is part of their life and their way of doing things to keep them safe. And so to kind of get that glimpse and understand that process was interesting. One of the big things right now is they have many pastors who are serving now as missionaries. And so many of them who are now in the field are looking to teach theology to some of these churches in the rural areas of Africa who have not spent a lot of time digging deep into theology. And so their knowledge of it is, maybe you could say, lacking. And so that is kind of one of their goals in East Africa currently. And one of the other interesting dynamics is kind of this united among altar and pulpit fellowship. Africa has had a long history of kind of ELCA roots. And so some of that is the pastors trying to just dig through the theology once again with these churches and just trying to see what they really believe.
Who else did you meet along the way? Anyone else that you met while you were involved in this short-term mission, if you will?
Yeah, so it's just some of the people I met. Reverend Shaolin Trump is the director of East Africa Missions, and he was kind of another one of the leaders who kind of invited me to serve on this continuing education program. And I also met his wife, who spent 9 years with him doing this mission work, and just learned some of her experiences as well. And it was neat to kind of get a glimpse of, I met a GEO missionary, Julie McManus, who was from Concordia, Nebraska. And so to meet her and kind of understand that role of a 2-year missionary and, what her role looked like. I also met many nurses and to kind of understand their perspective and how to minister to people in Kenya and Ethiopia through that gift of nursing was very cool. I also stayed, so we flew into Nairobi for the first night. So I'd actually stayed with a family, John and Jen Wolf. And John was actually in the military for 25 years, but now serves as kind of a program manager for these kind of different projects that the East African missions are partaking in. So it's very unique and interesting to see kind of his life experience of being in the military and how that has now helped him and shaped him to now serve the LCMS in East Africa.
How do you think this trip and your interaction with the missionaries and those the missionaries serve, how do you think this shapes your internship experience and perhaps your future vocations as well?
Well, for me, I have spent a few trips to Guatemala, and for me, just that short-term trip of seeing that lifestyle of simpler living always rubs off on me, and it's always kind of a good reminder to be thankful in all circumstances and just to kind of show just how blessed we really are. So I think, you know, to get other people involved in small-term mission trips has a lot of worth and a lot of value. So for me, kind of just taking that mindset now into my mission field currently of DC internship to kind of share my experiences with the congregation and to kind of always have that thankful heart, I think is a big thing.
What questions did those who you serve, particularly youth and families at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Charleston, what questions did they have about your trip, and what have you been able to share with them that you think might benefit them?
Some of the biggest questions have just been, you know, what have you done? What were some of the fun things you did? And kind of just what was the way of life? What did you learn? What did you experience? And so it always is unique to share some of those thoughts and, because a lot of people obviously have not spent time overseas, so to teach and learn and build people in that culture is very, very fun for me. It was neat to come back and share some stories that you'll never forget.
Did you, along the way, did you document or chronicle, share your story? Did you take pictures or journal about your trip?
Yeah, so one of the big blessings to be able to go on this trip last minute was just obviously my pastor, Ken Hoover, and my university supervisor at Concordia University of Chicago approving this trip for me and just saying that it was of worth. And so because of that, I really wanted to make an emphasis to take pictures and be able to share those stories through pictures. It was really neat to have multiple pictures of the VBS singing songs and doing different activities with kids and that nature walk that I talked about earlier. And my sister, Kristen, who led the kids in crafts, there's a few pictures of that. And one of the fun activities we did on this trip, we were able to go on three safaris in the evenings. So to be able to do that as well and have lots of pictures of that is very cool.
Now that you're back on the ground here in the United States and completed that that short-term mission trip and now carrying out the rest of your DCE internship with, I'm sure, plenty of things to learn in the rest of your internship this year. Once you complete internship, what's the next step? Do you have more classes to take or looking toward, hopefully toward certification?
Yes, so there are no more classes to take, and so I just have a little under 6 months left of internship. I'm currently going to graduate in May, and then the options are available for the future, which is very exciting.
Is serving internationally one thing that one way that you might be considering serving in the future?
That is a possibility and is an area that I've always been passionate about, serving internationally. Yeah, we'll see. It is exciting of the ministry possibilities.
Well, Matt, I pray that the rest of your internship is just as joyous and joyful in your service to the folks at Emmanuel in Charleston as you continue to learn in this vocation of Director of Christian Education. Thanks to your pastor there and your supervisors as well, and our friend. I gather your university supervisor is that Dr. Debbie Arfson at Concordia University, Chicago?
Yes, yep.
Well, thanks to her as well for her support and letting us share your story today. Thanks so much for being my guest on Faith and Family, and God's blessings on the rest of your internship, Matt.
Thank you so much. It's great talking to you.
I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
Would you like your investments to support the work of growing God's kingdom? Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When it comes to your financial needs, LCEF offers investments for everyone from infants to grandparents. And when you invest with us, you're not only supporting LCMS ministries, but you're also partnering with a financial institution that shares your Lutheran beliefs. Learn more at www.lcef.org.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates, and it is a great day here on Worldwide KFUO. We have some great news to share. Our friends from American Heritage Girls have news. We're going to recap 2016 and talk about what's coming up in 2017 as well. We'll also check in with our friends from the LCMS Office of National International Mission and learn about some short-term mission opportunities on Mercy Medical Teams. Joining me by phone now, Patty Garibay. She's the National Executive Director and founder of American Heritage Girls. Patty, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. Good to hear your voice again.
It's always great to have some time to talk with you, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your day. I hope things are going well at your office here in St. Louis. We've got some great weather here, and I bet it's headed your way.
I believe so. Tomorrow it'll be our gift, and I hope you're dealing with your gift just fine.
Well, for our listeners not familiar with American Heritage Girls, can you give us a quick overview of the work of American Heritage Girls? I know we've talked about it several times here, but just a quick recap of what is the work of AHG?
Absolutely. American Heritage Girls is a Christ-centered nonprofit character development program for girls ages 5 to 18. And American Heritage Girls comes alongside the church to provide the scout-type program to girls so that they can learn more about their identity in Christ, to grow in life skills and leadership skills, also to serve others and to really become the hands and feet of Christ. And we are thrilled to have a memorandum of understanding with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and together we can really help girls to form into young Christian leaders, and that's our goal. Our oath is, I promise to love God, cherish my family, honor my country, and serve in my community. And our mission statement is to build women of integrity through service to God, family, community, and country.
Now, you mentioned the Memorandum of Understanding with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We've shared in this partnership for a couple of years now, haven't we?
We have, and it's been a blessing to be able to provide an opportunity for the ministries of the Lutheran Church to grow and extend their reach to through this kind of a program. So it's not only an outreach, but an inreach to the girls in your congregation.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit about the stories from 2016 that you've heard from the troops across the United States of all these young women who are learning, growing, and serving together.
Absolutely. AHG is making a difference, and I believe the difference maker is because Christ is in it. All that we talk about and all that we want to achieve is His glory. And for girls to understand how to walk in that, how to live their faith every day, not just keep it for Sunday, how to make their faith relevant and their own. It's very important for girls to know what their faith is and why. And so for us, it's very cool to have mentors and adult leaders that share their strong Christian faith with the girls to help them navigate today's social environment and the, quite frankly, the society that we have today, which is so confusing for kiddos, that it is so helpful to have these ladies that help to navigate that. But there's been so much excitement that's happened this year, Andy. And some of those things I'd like to talk about is our highest award winners, which are our Stars and Stripes Award winners. Now, these are probably what you might consider the select girls, but really, they're any girl. They're girls that have decided to achieve a goal and to work towards that goal. And part of what they have to do is earn their religious recognition of their faith, as well as to do a 100-hour-plus service project that involves them leading others in accomplishing this gift to their community. Sometimes that gift to their community may be to their charter partner, their church. And one of those particular examples is Anya in Indiana decided to update the welcome room at her charter partner, her church, because she realized that, you know, when you come into the church, it's not so inviting. And so she made it very homey, and that was her Stars and Stripes. And then there was Bentley. She lives in Florida. She cares a lot about the homeless, and that is an issue for her. And so what she did is, at Restoring Hope Global, she actually cleared out the signage and put new lights in and painted and put a professional image around the warehouse that was helping the homeless get their food and also to be able to stay there overnight. And then she went even one step further and totally updated the children's play area so that the children could be enjoying their time while they were there at the homeless shelter. But one of the coolest ones, Andy, is this one, and it's from Virginia. And this gal's name is Amani. Now, Amani is 22 years old. She has Down syndrome. So usually that's a little old for Stars and Stripes, but because American Heritage Girls has a special needs appropriation, so to speak, to help those girls navigate, Amani's our first Stars and Stripes winner with Down syndrome. And what she decided to do was to create a mobile music cabinet for her children's preschool at her church that would allow the kids to enjoy their music time anywhere in the church. And so this rolling cabinet full of maracas and tambourines and all kinds of little musical instruments were what Amani wanted to do. And I love what Amani says the most. I mean, this got a lot of coverage, national coverage, by the way. She says, "I want to make music a part of everyone's life. I think God is calling me to encourage all to sing his praises. I want all people, but mostly the children, to use their skills and talents for God by singing, dancing, praising, and working hard at everything they do." And this is a Down syndrome gal that is blessed, blessed, blessed by American Heritage Girls. So my heart is full. It's been a great year just to hear these few stories plus so, so many more about the impact of American Heritage Girls.
Outstanding. Congratulations to those girls and the many who received the Stars and Stripes Award this year, or in 2016. Across the nation, across all of American Heritage Girls, were there any highlights or special events or milestones this year for American Heritage Girls?
There really were. We decided it was important to invest in training, and that there's nothing better than a well-trained leader who is invested in their spiritual walk as well. So we've got Christ-loving leaders and volunteers and men and women that now are being equipped or trained in how to do a great American Heritage Girl meeting, or how to do a great American Heritage Girl camp out or training. And so all that's provided by AHG are these trainings. And we've gone all over the country. Matter of fact, towns like we've been to Dallas, we're heading to Jacksonville, Florida, Southern California, Detroit, Raleigh, New Durham, and next year we're looking at Atlanta, Birmingham, Denver, Minneapolis, Nashville. So we will be all over the country actually coming to our volunteers where they're at, sharing the good news of American Heritage Girls and how to do it well, sharing best practices, and also I'll be sharing my story of how American Heritage Girls was started and how God has been right alongside me every step of the way to help empower a woman with very few resources to do something in his name that's making a difference.
Thanks for pointing out the training. How do things happen on a local level when it comes to the local troop? They have, I'm sure, leadership there. How does that all work? And then how are those leaders equipped to serve in that local setting?
Absolutely. First of all, the charter partner, which is the Lutheran Church, will say, "I would like to have American Heritage Girls," and the volunteers come alongside, and the charter partner then appoints those particular leaders. They decide that these are women that we want to represent our church and to lead girls through the American Heritage Girl program. AHG then supplies them with not just physical handbooks and things like that, but also a learning management system of training where no matter where you live, you can be trained. You don't have to wait for one of these what we call Equip Live training sessions to come to your area, but rather right on your computer at your leisure, you can be trained on what it's like to be an American Heritage Girl volunteer. And then we have great volunteers that want to mentor new volunteers. And so a mentoring program exists as well, which helps new volunteers navigate. What is this all about? What does it look like to really do this well? And how do you share best practices? So there's lots of help. And as the network grows and as American Heritage Girls has grown, we see more and more leaders wanting to help one another. And it creates a family-like atmosphere throughout the nation.
What about 2017? What do we have to look forward to in this year of 2017? Special events?
Oh, yes. Special events will abound. There'll be more of these Equip Lives coming through. The girls are having a lot of different camps, summer camps, as well as spring and fall camperies. So there'll be a lot of outdoor activities. And visit our website, which is www.AmericanHeritageGirls.org, to learn more about all the different activities. And also check out the girls' site, because the girls are blogging now. And it's so neat to see what God's doing in their lives through their involvement with American Heritage Girls. We're getting ready to celebrate Respect Life Week, and that is important to us. American Heritage Girls is a pro-life organization in regards to all the way from conception to natural death. We want to honor life. And I think that the story of Amani and really being able to earn her stars and stripes tells us that even those that may have a special need, they're important to the Lord and they're important to American Heritage Girls. Life before conception is important. And our girls love to be part of pregnancy care center service projects and even marching in Washington, D.C. And then the end of life. Our girls love to do adopt-a-grandparent programs and senior citizen centers. So, Annie, you'll never know what an American Heritage Girls is up to. But one thing I can tell you, it's always something good.
Well, I'm very grateful for the work of American Heritage Girls, and perhaps we'll see them at the National March for Life in Washington, D.C. again this year.
Absolutely, with their uniforms. And they'll be bundled up as well.
Very good. Patty, thank you so much for sharing with us, and God's blessings in the coming year for American Heritage Girls. Patty Garibay, National Executive Director and founder, American Heritage Girls. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll check in with our friends in the Office of International Mission for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, learn about some upcoming short-term mission opportunities on Mercy Medical Teams. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music, a blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The faithful face many challenges. In the United States, an increasingly secular society is hostile to people of faith. In many parts of the world, Christians face persecution and even death. Jesus himself warned us that we would be hated and persecuted for his sake. Free to be Faithful is a religious education and awareness campaign of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Part of that campaign is a 30-minute in-depth examination of specific religious liberty issues, and it's aired the third Wednesday of each month on Worldwide KFUO. I'm moderator Kip Allen. I examine these issues from a Christian point of view with experts from both the religious and secular worlds. Topics include the impact of the election on religious liberty, assaults on the traditional definition of marriage and family, and the fight for life. Listen live on Worldwide KFUO or streaming online at kfuo.org. The program may also be downloaded on demand.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is Friday, January 13th, and it is time now to get an update on what's going on with our short-term missions, our Mercy Medical Teams, with Tracy Quatham from the Office of International Mission of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Tracy, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have an opportunity to talk with you today about upcoming opportunities. Now, when I say upcoming, we're looking forward to the future, looking ahead down the road, trying to give our listeners an opportunity to start planning for one of these trips if they'd like to be a part of one of the Mercy Medical Teams. We have this year so far, we've had, in 2016, we've had some teams travel to serve around the world and great response to those. What was the most recent trip?
We had a team come back from Kenya in November, and then our next team will be going to Madagascar in March. But as we talk about planning, we're not talking only about 2017. We want to get people thinking about 2018 as well.
Very good. Well, thanks for helping us plan ahead. What are the opportunities coming in 2017 and 2018?
Well, we will be returning to some of the locations that we've been in the past. We'll be in Madagascar, East Africa, Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania. But we also will be in two new locations this fall, our first MMTs in West Africa, in Togo and Burkina Faso.
Wow, those are certainly two new locations. Tell me about how the opportunities opened up in those locations and what the needs are there.
Sure. Because we operate at the request of the field from the regional director, so that the missionaries request our services and then we provide what they need to support their ministry. We haven't really had the opportunity to be in West Africa, but now with Reverend Gary Schulte as the regional director and his wife, Stephanie, who is a registered nurse, she is serving as the director of medical projects in West Africa. And so with that new connection, we're able to reach out into West Africa and very excited about it because the infrastructure in West Africa for health services is just really not there in some places. So the need is great. We're happy to work with the missionaries and our partner churches and get in there and do what we do and help some people in the name of Christ.
Well, thanks be to God. What are some of the things that volunteers, those who serve on one of these short-term or Mercy Medical Teams does? What are some of the things they need to be equipped to do? I know, obviously, medical professionals, but there are people of all types that serve on these teams. What are some of the things we need to think about in order to serve on one of these teams?
Well, that's true. Doctors, nurses, pharmacists, all those kind of medical people are very necessary. But I think the biggest misconception is you don't have to be medical to come and work with us. Lay people can come, even if you've never done anything medical in your life except take your child's temperature. You can come on a Mercy Medical Team and do some of the things kind of behind the scenes that let those doctors and nurses then treat patients. Work in registration, work in the pharmacy, all kinds of opportunities for all kinds of people. In the past year, we've had volunteers age 18 to 82, all walks of life, just with the only thing they have in common is that they have that heart to serve the Lord.
Are there specific needs when it comes to medical professionals in the coming year?
Absolutely. Always doctors and nurses. Those are kind of the core base for what we do. But those who might be listening who have medical specialties, physical therapy, those kind of things, also very needed and wanted as well.
Very good. How does one begin the process of applying to find out what trip might be a good match for them and start that process to apply?
The easiest thing to do is to go to our website. It's lcms.org/mercyteams. There's lots of information about the program. There's a link if you'd like to talk to me, to email me, and then there's a link to the application when you're ready to apply.
Now, the teams for 2017 are listed on there. 2018
right.
teams, I would imagine, will be forthcoming. But you mentioned Togo and Burkina Faso. Is that correct?
Right. We'll be there this fall. Because these are our first teams in the new area, those teams will be smaller in size, maybe looking for some more experienced people to go on those teams. But then once these have run well, and we look to the future, hopefully those opportunities will be there for 2018 as well. But the other trips for 2017, the teams are open. We're forming them now. And I encourage you to just go and have a look.
What's been the response of the partner churches and those who have been served by Mercy Medical teams in the past? What I know you've traveled on some of the teams. What has been the response of those who have been served by these teams?
It's always very overwhelming to see the gratitude for your presence and for medical procedures and medications that we generally take for granted here, even something as simple as an antibiotic for an ear infection. But to see that gratitude that and the surprise that our teams are willing to go all the way around to the other side of the world to serve them. And we're constantly asked, why? Why are you doing this? And that just is the wonderful open door that we've been waiting for to say, because Jesus loves you and I am your brother and sister. So a wonderful opportunity.
And how does that help the partner church and the missionaries who are there year-round?
Well, it in several ways. Not only do we provide that physical healing that's needed in the community, as you and I both know, if you don't feel well physically, it's very difficult to think about anything else going on in your life. But then to provide that physical reminder that we are all part of the global body of church, and of Christ, the global body of Christ, we're all one together, and just it's a visible outward proof of that. Each of our teams has an LCMS pastor as it serves as team chaplain, and then that partnership between our team chaplain and the local Lutheran pastor is really a wonderful thing to see, that support, mutual support and encouragement together.
With just a few seconds left, about a half a minute left, let's go back to the website lcms.org/mercyteams. There you can find out the list of upcoming teams as well as information on how to apply, or you can email Tracy there. What are the next teams that have an open spot?
If you want to go in 2017, you can shoot for beginning this summer. We'll be in Tanzania and Madagascar and Uganda and Kenya, some of those places. So this summer or fall is a good time to maybe start planning to be on a team with us.
Tracy Quatham, Office of International Mission for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Thank you so much for being my guest today. God's blessings in the coming year of Mercy Medical Teams.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, that does it for Faith and Family today. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.